Derek Hoker, and I am at Turner Tech on March 22nd, 2002, to interview Oliver Gross about his personal history. Can you please tell us your name?
My name is Oliver Gross.
Could you spell it, please?
OliverGross.
How did you get that name?
My mother, when I was born, and I guess I got out of the hospital, she said, when I learned it, she said, your name is Oliver Gross. That was the name of my grandfather, my father's father. His name was Oliver Aaron Gross.
Who are your parents?
My parents was Laura Gross and Will Abbott Gross. My mother's maiden name was Laura Jenkins. She was born in a town in Georgia called Renz, W-R-E-N-S, Renz, Georgia. My father was born in Stapleton, Georgia. My mother and my father have passed away.
Sorry, describe the family you were born into, your siblings and birth daughter, your aunts, uncles, people who helped raise you.
Well, my mother's grandmother, my grandmother basically raised me a lot when we lived in Renz. I lived some time with her. But basically, I've always lived with my mother and my father. Always lived with my mother and my father. We lived a lot of different places. My father was working with a construction company that put up power lines all over the country. But there were many homes during that time in the early 30s who did not have electricity. They used lamps, kerosene lamps, for lighting. They didn't have any electric stoves. They used wood stoves. They didn't have refrigerators. They used ice box. You buy ice and put it in this box. There was no television. I don't think my mother must have got a television in 1949 when we got a television. That was a couple years before I finished high school. And I finished high school at Carver High School in 1951. 50 years ago, almost 52.
How old are you now?
I'm now 71 years old. I'll be 72 August the 31st.
Are there any stories about your family that you would like to smile about, that you remember?
Yeah, to have my father got away from the Ku Klux Klan. We was living in Georgia, in a little town called Stapleton. And my father was a farmer. We were the sharecroppers. Sharecroppers, and came time to settle up, and you had to sign the release paper saying that what information on the papers was correct. It's how much my father would get, money-wise, how much the lady would get. And he disagreed with her and said, it's not right. So that was a sense of a no-no, because you're talking back to the white woman. About 2 o'clock that morning, full day, I heard a noise outside, and I got up and I looked, and I called my mother and father, and outside there, about five guys on horseback with the hoods and the torches, the Ku Klux Klan, one of the most dreaded groups that you could ever probably encounter, because during that time, they was hanging young boys and doing all kinds of things with men's and everything else, you know. And they called my father and said, come out. They knew my father had this shotgun, this double 30. They know he had it. So we went out the back door and went to my grandmother's house. And like I said, that was one of those kind of things. My father stood up against these guys. And to me, that in itself was something that I'll never forget, because it was a dreaded group that feared by everybody all over the country. In this country, Ku Klux Klansmen. Everybody knew about them, the Riders of the Night. And my father stood up to them. I didn't get a chance to see him for about 4 years, but as it turned out, they didn't kill him. They didn't get him. They didn't do any harm to him. He got away just like we got away.
When did you meet up with him again?
In 1939. Met him in 1939, and then this was 36, I guess, 39. I met him again. He was living in Biloxi, Mississippi, working for this company. And that's when my mother and I went to visit him. and we left, and I came back, and then I lived with my grandmother in this town called Renz, which is about 33 miles south of Augusta.
Can you describe Renz?
Renz was a little town where we lived, and my grandmother's lived, and it has a situation there where, as a black, you could not go into the front door of any of these businesses. You couldn't go in the front door. They had a, what they call a back alley. Had an alley where everybody parked the wagons. Very few people had a car. My dad had an 8-mile 4, but you would have to come in the back door, the shop. You were permitted to go out the front door on your way out, but you couldn't go in to a front door of any building. That was the law. They had a theater there. We sit up in the balcony, and the whites sit down in the seats below. You couldn't sit down there. We had to sit upstairs. And they wasn't all talking movies. They was pitching movies where their writing would go along to the bottom. See, that's important by being in school. If you couldn't read, you didn't know what was going on. You just sitting there looking at people fighting, and they was speaking on words, was silent movement, and they had the writing. The writing was telling you what it was that they was doing. So that meant you had to go to school. You had to learn how to read the best you could, because if you went to a movie, you didn't know what was going on. You know what I mean? You would go to church. We had our own church. They had theirs, you know, and there was no using their bathrooms. You couldn't use that. We had to use our own colors and whites. You know, you didn't go into the restaurant when it says white. You couldn't go in there. You had to go to one that says colored. Had drinking fountains. That was packed all down south. The water fountains. You had to drink out the one that said colored. And they drank out the water that said white, you know? And that went on for years. I remember in the Orange Bowl out here, we would go to the football games, and we would sit in the end zone. The only place you could sit was in the end zone. And they had a rope in the center of the end zone. We was on one side, and some whites was on the other side. They kept you segregated, even in the football game in. See, University of Miami, the University of Florida, I mean, you know, there's nothing like that. As years went on, after I finished high school, I went to FAMU. A little football, ran track, and at that time, FSU was a girls' school. There was no boys there. There was no boys at FSU in 50, 40, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52. It integrated in 53 when they got boys. There were no boys there. The white boys went to school at the University of Florida, and the white girls went to school at FSU for girls. They segregated themselves. Girls couldn't go to the University of Florida. They had to go to FSU.
When did you move to Miami?
1943. We came from Fort Myers, Florida. I went to school for a while at Dunbar High School in Fort Myers. We came here, and we were living in Coconut Grove in 43.
Huh? Was it different
from Renz? Yeah, it was a little different in Renz, and different in such where in here in Coconut Grove, they had a lot of Bahamian people. They had a lot of blacks. Well, blacks lived with blacks then. They didn't live all over. They lived in Coconut Grove. You was in Coconut Grove where blacks lived. Certain part of Coconut Grove, blacks didn't live on certain streets now where blacks live now. It was whites. Just like Miami, over time, was a center for black culture. That was in and everything that you needed. High school was there, restaurants was there, hotel was there, museums, everything that you, a child, a person wanted. Movie theaters, doctors, lawyers, everything. Pool rooms, I mean, it was a community within itself. Big, magnificent, Mary Elizabeth Hotel, one of the nicest hotels you could ever see, with domens and valets and stuff, and valet your car and all that, and barber shops that cut your hair, newspapers. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Down the street with nice restaurants, nightclubs and stuff. See, then, the black entertainers, all the great entertainers then, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Cab Calloway, his wife, you name them, Buddy Johnson and his sister Ella Johnson, Arthur Prysack, you name them, they would entertain on Miami Beach. But they had to come back over time to live. See, they couldn't live in a hotel. Sammy Davis and all those, they couldn't live in a hotel. They entertained at these hotels. They had to come back over time to live in the hotels.
So the blacks had their own little area?
Yeah, had their own, over time. Over time was our own area. That was our area.
Do you remember anything about the civil rights movement?
Well, basically when I was in, well, I was working, but then I had it started in Selma, Alabama. I knew some of the people. I didn't, well, anticipate they have different riots and marches. Head had some in Tallahassee because Tallahassee was segregated and you couldn't go downtown to McCrory's and stuff. And Head, by me, you had the Burdines and places you couldn't, and you couldn't go in there and do anything, shopping, do try on clothes in rich department stores. And a lot of the stores are here now, what's not there then? See, and like in Burdines, like I was telling a young fellow before, the land that Burdines sits on, you notice that all the Burdines stores in Miami, you have been in contact with, they are here, they move someplace else, they move someplace else. But only Burdines store that has never moved is one downtown Miami. Because that land was owned, where Burdines owned, by a black family from Corner Grove. The bombing.
The bombing of Carver Housing Project in 1961.
Well, in 1961, you got to think in terms, you had a lot of, it had a lot of veterans, young blacks coming out of the army. They knew warfare. They knew how to fight. They knew how to plant bombs. They knew how to sniper. They knew all these kind of things. See, before when they had riots here, at Rice Head, it wasn't organized like the one in 61 because they got the young guys on top of roof, sniping fine trees and planned situation, you know. But then itself, I guess it to some degree, it worked to a certain degree, but then violence only creates violence. And then if you don't have all this, the ammunition stuff that you need, nine times out of ten, a lot of times you're going to really get hurt or get killed because you're going to have to go someplace and get it. And the people who got it has it. They're not going to let you have it. But the fact of it is, now is the most important thing, the ammunition now is young men, young women needs to stay in school. It's utmost important because if you don't stay in school and you don't get an education, and you don't try to improve yourself, no one else is going to do it for you.
Did you graduate?
Yeah.
Go to college?
Yeah.
What college did you go to?
Florida A&M. Well, then it was FAMC, Florida A&M College, Florida A&M College, FAMC. Now it's FAMU because it's a university. It became a university the same year that a university of FSU became a university in 53.
In college, were you politically aware?
Well, I do, but we knew about some things that were going on. You had to be political. You were living in an atmosphere where it was segregation. You couldn't go downtown and eat at these McCrory's and all the various eating places in Tallahassee. During that time, we could only go down to the train station. We couldn't go Tennessee Street, where FSU is. We couldn't go Tennessee Street. We would leave the campus, go down Adams, one block off, South Monroe, another block over, and walk South Monroe up past the Capitol. You can even go through the Capitol. You had to go up and facing the Capitol and down into Frenchtown. And I guess the only store that we got any service out of and still do is Nick Toggery. That's where Coach Gale was sending a fellow to get shirts and a bunch of stuff there, Nick Toggery, that was on Monroe.
How were you during the Martin Luther King era?
Well, during the Martin Luther King era, I guess I must have gotten married. I didn't really anticipate in all the marches they had all over the country, but being that, they had a lot of activities here that was done in itself that created a situation that betterment blacks. They had a lot of blacks, Dr. Simpson, Ms. Raines, and a lot of pastors and things, Simpson and people that worked here in Miami, inner working in Miami, who brought about a certain amount of changes here because they had golf courses we couldn't play on. They had a stadium with, they had the Roper Miller, and then they had a Biltmore Hotel, which had veterans out there and we couldn't play. And then we played basically all the football games. The activity was centered around Dawson Park. In Dawson Park, they played at Dawson Park, the football games at Dawson Park. And in Carver, we had a little makeshift stadium out there in Coconut Grove Park that Carver High School played. It had a little gym, but we didn't have no air conditioning in school. Basically, not really much heat, and you didn't have, like, they had all the showers now and all the lockers then and all the fancy clothes they wearing and all the hairdos and stuff. And all the boys wearing this pants, I guess, all right, but the only thing that bothers me is that they're hanging off their behind. See, that bothers me. See, because you've got to create an image for you. See, what someone else does doesn't have anything to do with you. If he, another boy you know, wear heads down, why should you do the same thing? It doesn't do anything for your personality. It's how you feel about what you want to do. So, well, my boy, my man, you know, he did, you know, my man do it. Well, you know, does he do anything that you want you to do? You got to think about what's important to me? And the different kinds of way to express themselves, certain words they use. I mean, when I was over that the ag school, that word they use, I didn't like that word. I didn't like that word. I made sure every child that was in my presence in the ag school, okay, wherever I saw them, on this side or wherever, that word, that N word. So I didn't like that word at all. Kids would come in the classroom and sit down. And I'd make them get up and go outside. And they would say, why are we outside, Mr. Gross? Come in. You didn't say good morning. You can't come in this room and not say good morning. They come in and blop down on the seat. You want me to respect you? Then you got to respect me. Miss so-and-so. It's just that simple. If I respect you, you got to respect me. You can't come at me no other kind of way. I ain't going to hurt nobody, no job talking you're going to do to me. You know, but I've been out there. I know all these guys. I've been in the street before. I've been to jail. So ain't no big thing about it. Thing about it is if you go to jail one time, you never want to go again. I don't care if there's a holding cell because they get a record for you and they keep it on you. And you'll never get rid of it because the people who are going to get rid of that record for you, it's not you. Period.
So you're a man of respect.
Yeah, you're a man of respect. I respect you. You respect me. If you can't respect me, then you need to be in some other class someplace else, not in mine. Well, we had some registration drive because during that time you couldn't vote. And I was working at Pan Am, and I remember people was trying to vote and register. They would say, who wants to work overtime? You never work overtime when you got to vote. There's no time to work overtime. You go and vote. You register downtown. You get a registration card in your pocket. It's something you can be proud of because you have not always done that. I remember when we worked it, I worked at Pan Am. I started out there in 1963. And they had the colors and the white signs. And the whites sit on one end of the restaurant at the building, dining hall, and blacks on the other side. You clean both toilets. You can use this one, and you can use the other. And as time went on, it changed some to where they took all this signs down. Taking signs down has its presence, but it doesn't do any good if the person doesn't change. See, if you and a white guy have been at odds all along about those signs, it won't mean anything until the two of you reach a point where y'all agree and you become acquaintance, not friends, acquaintance where he can respect you and you respect him. I'll be a Puerto Rican, Cuban, I don't care, it don't make no difference. See, because when I was in school over here, I didn't believe in that boy or that girl. I don't believe in that. Either I need a name, because somebody slap you, knock you down, and beat you up, you come to me, Mr. Groves, that boy hit me, that bright-skinned boy with curls in hair, that white boy with this and that Puerto Rican boy. That's not telling me anything. I don't know what you're talking about. You got to give me a name. I got to know your name. And like I said, I took a kid out of my room because he told me he wasn't going to read. He said, Mr. Gross, I'm not going to read. I said, what? So I'm not going to read. Class full of students. I wrote a referral. Sit him on this side. Let them do something with him because he can't come back over there again. He brought his mother back. And the mother said, well, you put my son out and he this and he that. I said, what did he tell you? He's a man. Tell him what he told me. He told me, you said he won't put him out of the room. I said, well, ask the kids, what did he say yesterday before yesterday? He said, Ms. Groves, you're not going to read. Because I treat everybody the same. Make no difference. Black, white, Puerto Rican, Cuban. We had all kinds of kids from France and Netherlands. We had horses on the other side. We had riding academies. We had all kinds of things over there. And that's what it's got to be. You go to class, you learn for yourself. You can't expect nothing special. You can't expect more from somebody, teacher, than another person to get it. You want to cheat yourself. And you don't want to be cheated in life.
So you're a teacher?
Yeah, at tech school over there. I was there for 10 and a half years. I retired in 98 for Mr. Partner, Mr. Miller, Mr. Collins. I know everybody here. A lot of these people's here when Dr. Kennedy brought them here. I know them all. I come back all the time, go in the cafeteria and eat, come in and talk to the lady, talk to the sister principal. Mr. Burchell, when he was here, he's gone. Dr. Kennedy, and Mr. Lewis and all that, Mr. McMahon and all those, and Mr. Drew Prince, got down, I knew him from Drew. And I visit a lot of other schools and talk to kids at Brownville and places. And we adopted my alumni chapter, the Gold Coast chapter. We adopted North Day Middle. And periodically we go and talk to the kids, the eighth graders who are going to come here. And I try to very hard to make the kids understand that you need to go to school someplace. You don't necessarily have to go to FAMU, which is my first preference, but you must go someplace. You must go someplace and get you a piece of paper. See, when you get that piece of paper, it keeps you out the room with the guys who taking the test. You got a resume. You just turn in a resume. And that's it. Someone's struggling taking a test. You being interviewed down there someplace and you're going to get a job because you got that resume. When you leave here, you get that certificate. You need to use that certificate. If you're not going to go away to school someplace, go apply for a job. That certificate will help you get a job. But like I didn't show the man where I worked my certificate. It's like, well, you in 4 years in school and you don't got a certificate? You didn't let anybody know? See, that's looking out for yourself. You got to look out for self. Start to stay out of jail. Stop putting yourself in a position where you're going to get beat up. You're going to get knocked around. You're going to get mistreated, kicked around, no jobs. People lying in the street. We never, in my time, had people lying and sleeping in the street. We had a little jail over town on 11th Terrace. They would put you in jail and you was out on Monday. Unless someone created a mass murder or something, or kill a lot of people to rob somebody, they would go downtown that jail there on Flagler, a big tall building. People working on chain gang with somebody other than us. See, the thing what happened, when they said that inhumane treating to prisoners was wrong, and we must change it. So they changed it. So now what happened? All the people in jail now are black. You go downtown, it's full. There's some Puerto Rican, some Cuban, but they go down, they shuffling through the hallway, and they live going down with them. And they get out of jail, and they got no place to go. The parents don't want to be bothered with them, the grandmother won't be bothered with them, the daddy won't be bothered with them. And they say, I'm a single parent, and where your dad? Everybody got a daddy. Ain't cloning nobody yet. Everybody got a daddy somewhere. And like I always said, I try to treat every child I know, whoever he or she is, with respect. Miss so-and-so, Mr. So-and-so-and-so, and when I see you see me, and you ain't first naming me, because I'm not going to first name you. That's respect for one another. It's just that simple. We got to have respect for one another. If you're trying to be impressive to someone and whatever you're doing, then you live with it. If it's good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad. When it turns bad, don't expect me to be a champion of your cause when you've done all these kind of things and now you're up against you laying out there somewhere in the street, somebody done shot you up, and you ain't dying. What do you want me to say about you? I can't say anything. I can only, your life is yourself.
Back in the Civil Rights Movement era, ministers and college students would work with farm workers. There was mending of the races. Why do you think that such a diversity
in our times now, the new technology that they have now, we are not using it as well. See, back after the Civil War, blacks owned all maybe 2/3 or more of this land in this country. They had it. The Reconstruction era had more people than Congress and in government at any time ever. But we didn't know how. I say we, black, didn't know how to use the land. And he's sitting there looking. Ain't nothing happened. He just said looking. So he said, well, okay, I'll tell you what I do. Y'all don't know how to manage this land. You know how to farm it. You know how to make a business out of it. I'll be the person that'll show you how to do it. And it turned right back. See, like when I talk to kids and we talk about the ag school, they say farming. That's the farthest thing from farming. See, without agriculture, there is no life. Everything in this whole building, everything you got on your clothes, the jewelry you got, it's all agriculture. Everything is agriculture. All the plants, all the airplanes, all the buildings, all the float tiles, the clothes, stove, refrigerator, bus, automobile, gas, fuel, everything is agriculture. The byproduct.
When?
Here, with that certificate, it's telling someone that you have learned something for the last 4 years. And how you apply yourself with that certificate is what your life is going to be. If you get it and throw it in a drawer someplace and forget about it, you got nothing coming. Because the certificate says the county and the school have agreed that the people who leave here with a certificate will be given a job. I mean, one time here they had a diesel school here. They had 36 students here in diesel, half girls, half boys. When the class was over, at the end of the time, there was no boys and all girls. And now they work for the county making that $18 and $20 an hour working on those buses and trains. You know what I'm saying? All the boys want to do is they want to play football. You remember they're not going to be a football player. Yeah, some other guy might be a football player. But everybody can't be a football player. Somebody got to own the team. Somebody got to buy the tickets. Some got to have the concessions. Some got to have the parking. He said, well, when I finish, I'm going to have me a dealership. I'm going to be selling cars. I'm going to have me some 10 or 15 service stations. Tell me how many football players, basketball players, stars own anything. Tell me what they own. Nothing. Michael Jordan, all these guys for the Heat, they don't own nothing. They got big old car, Mercedes-Benz, right? They don't own nothing. They don't own no hotels, they don't own a big restaurant. They all spend all the money on Mount Beef, but they don't own the place where they visit. They pay $2, $3 billion, $5 million for a house, and they sell it to somebody for half of what they paid for it? That don't make sense. Does that make sense? But they don't do that. But see, we the race of people. We got to learn how to take care of one another and look out for one another. Now stop being evil to one another. We got to help one another. We all got to help each other. Just like that World Trade Center. That was our World Trade Center, like everybody else. See, but like when I went to FAMU and I went to Korea, got shot at and everything else. I came back here and I couldn't go to University of Miami. I couldn't go to FSU, University of Florida. I had to go back to FAMU. Not that I didn't want to go back there. But during that time, now you got a chance, an opportunity to go to these schools and meet different peoples and enhance your life and learn about other people's culture and get as much up here as you can get and use it wisely and stop being abusive to the people that you're going to be living with and go, them young girls. See, them young girls, Young girls now look 9 times better than young girls did 10 years, 15 years ago. They dress nice, they grow the hair, they wear different clothes, they don't eat as much, they slim down, they wear shoes, and they look good. So you got to keep them that way. You got to be out there looking for you someone who's going to live the rest of your life with you. Dipping, dapping, then you find out one day there ain't nobody out there for you. You're out there by yourself, running around with a bunch of boys. And then you get yourself downtown, they hug and kiss you, see? Then you got a problem. In the jails down there, because everybody else was boys in jail. You get on that floor. You ain't never been on that floor with all the boys at the hugging kitchen. You ain't been there yet. But don't go down there, because it's there. And they'll do it to you. Take your shoes, take your clothes off, do everything else to you. You want to make your life as good as you can for you and the surrounding in your community. You want to work and get you some money and build some home, build some apartment, get some service stations. See, that's billet. You want that. Some guy needs 4 or 5 service stations. Some guy needs a janitorial business. Some need doctors, lawyers, and everything. See, I'd much rather buy a ticket and take my girl to a football game and be out there playing. Man, get beat up, get chairs all on you and scarred up. You want to get some nice suits and clothes and dress yourself up? Take her to the restaurant so she can eat and have a good time? Girls are sometimes seasonal girls. In football season and basketball season, in baseball season, you need you one who's going to be with you through the whole year. And you're not playing anything. You're just working and, you know what I mean, going to the restaurants and going to dancing, going to the theater and going to resorts and just living, man, that's that good life, going to New York City, going to Paris, because, you know, it's that good life that you work for and you can appreciate it. Don't be, you know, you do that for yourself. Your life will be much better. Have respect for the people in the neighborhood. Make people have that respect. Teach your little brother, your little cousin. They got to respect people. If you don't give it, you're not going to get it. And you say, well, he's bad. There's always somebody badder than you. You out there selling drugs, and you're going to get away. You either one or two things. You're going to jail for the rest of your life, or somebody's going to kill you. That's a sure thing. Them drugs, they get killed, they bring them in here, and they sell drugs, they catch them and everything. The drug band takes the money. Police, everybody gets some of the money. Judge, you go to jail, you got to spend all the money trying to get out of jail. What good is it done? But, like I always told the kids, if you got enough nerve to sell drugs and take a chance of getting killed and going to jail for the rest of your life, you could be one of the best businessmen in this world, in this time. You could own almost anything. You understand what I'm saying? Because you're willing to take a chance on life, getting killed, or going to jail for the rest of your life. If you use it, you turn it around. You get two or three service stations, some apartment buildings, landscaping stuff. Somebody landscaping buildings and stuff, building homes, putting in appliances. See, all these big businesses that sell all these TVs, you know what I mean, all these shows and things, you selling TVs, CDRs, and all that other kind of stuff. You got a business going. Everybody working for you. Oh, there going to be some people going to be in for the fact, but you working people, and you provide a means for them to get something. And you get a satisfaction out of it. The young man the other day, read the paper today, where he gave Florida Memorial $1 million. They gave him a chance. Cuban kid. Gave him a chance. University of Miami didn't. And for the chance they took on him to help him. He didn't finish Florida Memorial, but they gave him a chance. When the University of Miami went out there. Come back yesterday, he gave him $1 million. One of the biggest businessmen in New York City. He gave him $1 million to do whatever it is they want to do with it. See, that's the recognition you get. When you leave here, you want some of the teachers to say something good about you. Because if they don't say anything good about you, I don't care how many questionnaires you send him about getting a job. They say, well, he's no good, he's disrespectful, and you never know. And that's the end of you. You always want someone to say something good about you. And all of them say something good about you, you got to carry yourself that way.
Okay, thank you for coming.
All right, so. Oh, yes. I like to come and talk to young people. I get a pleasure out of talking to young people, because young people, to me, is the future of this time. For me, I'm going to get a lot of stuff. I'm almost 72 years old. And another 10 years from now, if you're doing something like that good, I can benefit by it. But I can't help you right now. I'm not in a position. You need to be grasping on to your peers. You need to be grasping on to someone 5 or 10 years older than you, the kid who's in college, you're going to come out. When you go to college, you're going to come out. If you don't come, go to college. Get your trade. There's a lot of people, telephone company, different CD companies, computers, and everything. There's ways and means to make a tremendous amount of money where you don't have to be ducking the police at night, knocking on your door. You're afraid to open the door. Your buddy done got killed down the street somewhere. He trying to sell some drugs and using soda and stuff and mix it up and trying to get away. They'll kill you, man. Now you can't go to airport. You got to go to airport and check in for 2 hours ahead of time to fly a plane. They never done that before. I lived in New York City for 15 years, and my wife lived here and taught school. I would come down here every week. I'd come here every Friday and leave every Monday to be here with my wife and my child, because she was teaching school here. Had a continuous contract. I did that. 15 years. Don't tell me what you can't do. I got a girl, man, and she this and she that. Hey, some guys don't have girls. There's an acquaintance. You never been to a house. You never ate dinner. You never been on a picnic. You never been on vacation with them. The daddy don't know you. The mother never seen you. It's just a girl you know, right? You don't ain't no girlfriend of yours. It's somebody you know. So you got to, your perspective, you got to know just who you are, what you want to do, or at least give it a chance. Give yourself a chance in life to really accomplish something. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to you, your parents, your neighborhood, everybody, all these kids in this school, you owe them something. You're trying to do the very best with your life that you know how.
You don't want to get out the street, get shot up with a pocket full of drugs and running cars and they kill you. And it's, well, what happened to him? He didn't see me that way. See, so some guys sell drugs for 10, 15 years and nothing going to happen because they got a godfather, somebody watching out for them. But you ain't going to have nobody. They ain't going to let you come out to sell a drug and take all the money from them. But you're a doctor. The guy got to come see you. You're a dentist. They got to come see you. You own service station. They got to buy gas. They got to buy that service, auto repair, TVs. You know what I mean? They got to come to you. You get all that money. Go into the bank with. Put it in the bank. You got somebody working for you, making plenty of money, utilizing your talent. Yeah, I need to play. Like I said, Michael Jordan, what do you own? Nothing. All these basketball players. Tell me something they own. Big hotels, big restaurant? No. I own none of that. Conglomerate, big auto dealerships and all that, selling cars, Rolls Royce, Mercedes Benz and all that, they're making $100 million. Where the money goes? 33% more goes to the agent. And they buying all these cars, all these watches, and paying $700, $800 for the suits. And they ain't no good. The suit ain't no good to nobody but them. They can't take it to pawn shop, get $800 for it. They buy a high for $4 million and then sell it for $2 million. What? Where's the math? You got to be aware of your surroundings and the things that you do that's going to make you successful in life.
I appreciate it. Thank you again.
Okay. My pleasure. Yes, sir.